This audio presentation was pre-recorded and edited for brevity and clarity.
Hello, and welcome to today's Bright Focus Glaucoma Chat. My name is Casey Baez, VP of Integrated Marketing and Communications at Bright Focus Foundation, and I'm happy to be here with you today as we talk about building connection and community. Take charge of your glaucoma diagnosis. Our glaucoma audio chats are a monthly program in partnership with the American Glaucoma Society designed to provide people living with glaucoma and the family and friends who support them with information straight from the expert. Now I'd like to introduce today's guest. We're excited to welcome back Dr. Amy Zhang, who is an assistant clinical professor of glaucoma services at the University of Michigan's Kellogg Eye Center. She was also assistant clinical professor at Case Western University, where she was a glaucoma fellowship director. Among her many interests are her work in minimally invasive glaucoma surgery and home tonometry. She also has an interest in improving ergonomics and looking into the drivers of burnout and is the wellness director at Kellogg Eye Center. We have another guest here with us today, a glaucoma advocate named Carolyn Edward, who was diagnosed several years ago with the disease in 2006. Her treatment has included multiple eye drops, SLT, trabeculectomy, and most recently, a combined cataract removal and MIGS procedure. Carolyn has had six different glaucoma specialists, mostly due to job transfers, which has made her passionate about patient advocacy and the responsibility to take ownership of one's own health. Welcome, Dr. Zhang and Carolyn. We're so excited to have you here.
Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Casey, for having us.
Great. So now we'll dive in, and our first question is for Dr. Zhang. So when you embark on your journey with someone who has been newly diagnosed with a type of glaucoma, what are typically their first reactions and questions?
Usually, the first reactions are of fear and uncertainty of what that means. So what does having glaucoma mean? What does that mean in terms of my vision? How is this going to affect my activities of daily living? Certainly the concern about, is this going to result in blindness? How quickly will the disease progress? There are also a lot of questions regarding, is this hereditary? Are there other members of my family that I need to notify or have my kids be checked? And some other questions related to, why did this happen? How did it happen? What did I do? Also, questions regarding, what can I do now moving forward? Are there specific foods? Are there diets? Are there exercises that I can do to kind of improve upon this diagnosis, or just the general, like, why? I think I'm certainly interested in hearing what Carolyn has to say about that as well.
Great. Thank you. And Carolyn is joining us from the beautiful Hawaii. And so, Carolyn, can you take us through your diagnosis journey? How were you feeling when you received this diagnosis? And what questions did you have afterwards?
Sure. You know, it feels like Dr. Zhang was in my head in 2006. So it's been a long time, but I do still very clearly remember that day and the time after. I do have a family history of the disease, and I had a maternal grandmother at the time. She was in her 80s, was blind from glaucoma. And so I knew I needed to have regular screenings, but when I was diagnosed, I was only 38 years old. So I was very surprised. You know, I was told, really, this is something you need to be careful of later in life. So I was fairly young. It definitely took some time to absorb the gravity of the diagnosis. You know, I think once I got over the initial surprise, shock, being scared, all of those emotions, I did believe it could likely be managed just with eye drops. My case ended up being a little bit more complicated, and I've needed some other interventions. You know, probably my biggest fear is, will I go blind? And thanks to good doctors, you know, I do understand certainly now and through my journey that even if you do have complications and a more challenging case, that there's a lot they can do these days with new interventions coming all of the time. So I guess that's what was going on in my mind then and to some degree still today.
Wow, that had to have been so shocking at 38 to get that type of diagnosis. I think it seems like it's becoming more and more common, and I'm sure Dr. Zhang could weigh in on that. And so when people are receiving that that diagnosis and are spending time at their doctors, we know that doctors increasingly have extremely busy schedules and maybe not as much time as they would always like to spend with each person they see every day. And so what tips would you have for people who have been diagnosed with glaucoma in order to maximize their time with their doctor, particularly as they start on their journey at whatever age they may be and as they move along their journey?
Sure. I think one aspect that Carolyn touched upon, which is so important, is understanding whether they have a family history of glaucoma, sort of maybe asking some members of their family or just saying that if they are not aware of any family members, certainly writing down some of the questions that you may have ahead of time would also help facilitate that conversation. If the patient is sort of transferring their care either from their optometrist or from an outside ophthalmologist who may not specialize in glaucoma, making sure that the office has those prior records or even bringing your own copies of those records, like specifically prior visual fields, as well as optic, like OCT, nerve OCT testing, those would be super helpful for the physician, for the glaucoma specialist who's seeing that patient. And sometimes it just realizing that we may not be able to address all of the questions and concerns in that visit, and that especially with glaucoma, it's definitely a more longitudinal relationship, and that we may need to follow up in a couple of months to answer further questions. I think from the physician side, if there's any control over the design of your own templates to account for longer times, especially for your new patient glaucoma evals, if you can somehow build that into your existing schedule so that you're given the opportunity to spend more time with the first introduction of the diagnosis of glaucoma, that would be great.
Thank you, Dr. Zhang. Seems like in any instance that you have to embark on a new diagnosis journey with a doctor, having copies of those medical records and writing down the questions ahead of time, it's really so critical, because especially if you're one of those people who might get nervous when you go to the doctor and then you forget things, like me. And so that's super helpful advice. And so, Carolyn, from your perspective, how do you get the most out of your visits with your doctor?
Right. I've definitely had visits where I feel like it's very productive, and visits where, you know, either the doctor is very busy or I am, or maybe I wasn't as focused or prepared for the visit. And I do think that responsibility goes both ways. I was fortunate the first time I made a move after my diagnosis, my specialist did give me hard copies of all of my key information. So I brought that to the next doctor, and he was very surprised and appreciative. So that is the best practice for me, is that I ask for hard copies of those tests, and I do keep one file, so I have pretty much my entire history going back, which I think, you know, can be helpful, might be overwhelming to a new doctor. They're not going to need all of it, but at least I've got it if they ask questions. I do try to make sure I spend a few quiet minutes and write down any questions before I go, because again, you can go in with the best of intentions and then it gets rushed, or you get off on another topic, or maybe you've had a pressure spike, or they're suggesting a change in treatment and you don't get to the thing that you really wanted to speak with them about. And, you know, I would also say that I'm someone who thinks of myself as very independent, and I usually go to doctor's appointments by myself, but I'm lucky enough to have a really supportive spouse. And on the couple of occasions where my case has gotten tricky and I might not understand or I'm a little bit overwhelmed by the information, I have brought him with me. And that's really helpful, even after the appointment, to kind of go back and forth and make sure we heard the same thing. And, you know, somebody else can kind of back up and support what I've heard and what my next step should be.
That's excellent to have that, you know, that person there with you. Seems like that's so helpful when you're just back and forth at different providers and trying to remember everything to build that support. And so what do you look for in a glaucoma provider specifically, Carolyn? And have you ever had to seek a second opinion?
You know, I got close once. I'm fortunate that I haven't. So I looked for a couple of things. Again, I've got a fairly aggressive case. So I was advised early on that I really do need to see a glaucoma specialist. So to me, that means an ophthalmologist, which has fellowship training in this field. But as important, I think you need to find someone that you personally connect with and that most importantly, you feel like really listens to you and is open to questions. Regarding that second opinion question, my vision loss was progressing in, I guess it was 2012, before I had a trabeculectomy, which is the, you know, kind of the gold standard, but a fairly aggressive eye surgery. And I was very scared of doing it. And I wasn't convinced it was the right step because, again, you know, I couldn't perceive my vision loss. I had vision loss in one eye, but your brain compensates for a very long time. And I wasn't convinced. So at that point, I brought my husband, you know, and I asked him, I said, you know, how would you feel if I got a second opinion? Because again, I wasn't convinced. He was completely supportive, which, you know, to me is a sign that you have the right doctor. He suggested a couple of additional tests, redoing a couple of tests. And again, encouraged me to get a second opinion if I felt more comfortable doing that before the surgery. I ultimately decided not to. I felt like he was the most qualified person to do the surgery. And by that point, I was convinced. But I would tell anybody with any medical condition, if you're not comfortable and there is another specialist in your area, I realize for some people that's limited based on where you live, different insurance plans or whatnot. I think whenever you can do that, it is advisable if you're not comfortable.
Great, thank you. Always second and third opinions out there. And Dr. Zhang, so how important is it for your patients to have connections with others who have glaucoma? And are there health benefits to maintaining social relationships for someone with low vision?
So my patients have shared with me that it is really helpful to have connections with others living with the same disease process like glaucoma, whether it being like a support network or if their own family members also have glaucoma. I think they state that having someone who's gone through similar experiences, either with eye drops or surgical procedures, it's really helpful to have that community. In that sense, there's also some caveats in terms of, you know, not being too tied up with someone else's, you know, either complication of their surgery or their medication use. There are certainly health benefits with maintaining a social relationship with everyone as we all age, and especially for those who have a more low vision or decreased vision that sort of predisposes you to being even more isolated. A lot of the research regarding social connections have been done in the aging with correlation of both dementia and depression. So I think having a good social network is super important. I'm interested in hearing Carolyn's perspective on this as well.
Thank you. So Carolyn, what does your support network look like in addition to the support you've mentioned previously from your husband? And how can others with the disease overcome any anxiety or fear they have around discussing their diagnosis more openly in support-based or community settings, or just getting over the sort of the fear of that comes with talking about, you know, something like an incurable disease. It's a disease with no cure. So I mean, it's scary. So how do you go? How should somebody go about that?
Right. It's a great question. You know, again, I did mention my husband. I would say my broader family is a really important support network for me to start. Since my diagnosis, my mother, interestingly enough, was diagnosed after me, but still is really considered kind of a borderline case, really more of a glaucoma suspect. And she's 78. So, you know, that's been quite a while. I do have a younger sister. I'm the oldest of four kids. So I do have one sibling, also with glaucoma, and two at this point who do not. And again, they're both younger. So, you know, who knows what happens there. But that's an important part of my network. Again, when I was diagnosed, there was not much in terms of support groups. My first two doctors really didn't have a lot of advice there. I think I perhaps asked the question after a couple of years, but I don't think I did at the beginning. And it was really only when my case was progressing and was proving difficult to handle that I started looking for some of the chat groups, discussion forums. I think Dr. Zhang's, you know, just kind of word of caution there is spot on, because I believe you tend to get patients that have probably the more serious cases, again, complications, really upset by the diagnosis. And that can be, you know, a rabbit hole that you go down. So I do think you need to be making sure that you're with reputable sources, right? Such as this one, for example. However, I think any discussion group, people you can talk to, anything that's sponsored by a reputable organization or is moderated can be really helpful. And I do to these days. That's how I ended up with AGS. Again, being connected to a couple of the glaucoma support organizations and charities has given me some options to work with and talk with, you know, really reputable doctors and other patients that have gone through the same thing.
Thank you. I agree that there are some forums out there that if you're not careful, you could spiral into a rabbit hole that will worsen your fear rather than provide hope. And going with those reputable organizations is always a good thing. And so Dr. Zhang, what resources do you provide or suggest to your patients or others who have been diagnosed with glaucoma?
So some of the resources that we provide for our patients include the education guides from the American Academy of Ophthalmology, specifically with treatment guidelines, our own American Glaucoma Society Subcommittee on Patient Engagement has been working on formulating our own sheets about what does that mean, diagnosis of glaucoma, driving with glaucoma, certain treatments with laser or surgery. So we've been formulating these informational guides to allow for ophthalmologists and glaucoma specialists everywhere to share that with their patients, because there's just so much online content that's out there on the web, and it's hard to validate whether it's true or just people's opinions. And I think that's super important when you're looking at disease processes. Certainly, like a modality like what Bright Focus is doing with these glaucoma chats is also an opportunity for patients to find out more, because it's both the patient as well as the physician sort of moderating as well as regulating some of the questions that are answered. So I think these modalities are probably the best rather than just a resource where there's not really a professional opinion. I would just be wary of those resources.
Thank you. And so what are the barriers to obtaining resources or support as a person diagnosed with glaucoma? Are there resources out there available for those who might have transportation or technological or financial limitations?
I think some of the barriers to obtaining resources and support as a glaucoma patient have been the avenue of, if your vision's poor and we're giving you a pamphlet, it's probably very difficult to read that pamphlet if the vision's decreased. So looking at audio sources in which you can get that information is also important. With regards to the barriers for obtaining resources, there has also been a national shortage of certain glaucoma medications due to the ophthalmic supply chain in terms of getting the drops. So I know for a lot of my patients, especially during the pandemic times, there were limitations on what they could get or not get in terms of their glaucoma medications, and that can be certainly very scary. There's only a few ophthalmic supplies out there, and so when there's a national shortage of these medications, what could you do or what do you do in those circumstances? For those that have more of a transportation or financial limitation, for the transportation, we're fortunate enough, we're big enough of an academic center that we could leverage the resources of our social workers to help coordinate care in terms of that. And they're also very helpful for looking at some of the financial ways to gather around that. I do want to point out, with a lot of the branded glaucoma medications, there are forms that could be filled out for financial assistance for some of these glaucoma drops that may be more expensive. So looking into that would be good for all patients, as well as sometimes, you know, you may have to, as a patient, you may have to fill out a portion of it, and then there's a portion for your glaucoma specialist or your ophthalmologist to fill out as well. But certainly we have a lot of traction, a lot of need to move these sort of improving the resources on all those things that you had mentioned.
Thank you, Dr. Zhang. So Carolyn, what is the best piece of advice you would offer to our audience and somebody trying to build more of a connection following a glaucoma diagnosis?
Right. You know, I think it is, it's a long game, right? It is a chronic disease that you will live with for the rest of your life. But so I guess most important, educate yourself with reputable resources and be an advocate for yourself, while at the same time, don't let your glaucoma diagnosis consume your life. And even those of us with aggressive cases can lead, in my opinion, a perfectly normal life. You have to make time for your appointments. You have to take your eye drops. You happen to be open to more and different interventional procedures if you need that. But you know, at the end of the day, it is easy to be consumed by it. And I've certainly had a couple of periods in my life where I've done that. But you know, try not to at that point talk to somebody. And you know, most of us can live with this for a very long time, hopefully without losing too much eyesight.
Thank you. And there's new research discoveries every day. And so, Dr.
All the time.
That we are so hopeful, and every day there is something new that is coming out about glaucoma research. And so, Dr. Zhang, do you have any final advice for our listeners on how they can take charge of their glaucoma diagnosis and build connections and support that will improve their well-being?
I think Carolyn actually gave a really good summary of the importance of being your self-advocate for yourself in terms of your diagnosis, as well as one thing I want to highlight is the importance of finding that physician who will work with you on the management of your glaucoma. So I think because it's such a longitudinal relationship, it's really important that you find somebody who is actively listening to what you're saying. They may have the best ideas of what types of procedures or eye drops to use, but if they're not listening to how it's impacting you in terms of, you know, your lifestyle and how it may be difficult to do eye drops at certain times, then perhaps that's not the best fit. So I think finding that fit in your glaucoma specialist is super important, because you do have a very long relationship with that person, and it's important to feel comfortable to ask those questions. It is certainly important to set up a network of those that can support you. There are holistic approaches that help with general well-being, and some limited literature showing the effects of meditation and some forms of exercise may actually help to decrease the oxidative stress on the body, which may then also help with intraocular pressure lowering. But of course, those the research on that is more limited. But I think what Carolyn was saying about, you know, you can live an active lifestyle. It doesn't have to be a diagnosis that defines you is super important.
Thank you so much, Dr. Zhang and Carolyn, for all the important information you shared with us today. Our next glaucoma chat, Glaucoma Imaging, Trends in Detection and Diagnosis, will be on Wednesday, April 10th. Thank you again for joining us, and this concludes today's Bright Focus Glaucoma Chat.
The information provided in this recording is a public service of Bright Focus Foundation and is not intended to constitute medical advice. Please consult your physician for personalized medical, dietary, and/or exercise advice. Any medications or supplements should only be taken under medical supervision. Bright Focus Foundation does not endorse any medical products or therapies.